And welcome to the BS with Friends podcast, a subsidiary of the Bader and Simon Gallery, scheduled to open in Cincinnati, Ohio in early 2025. I'm your host, Tamara White, founder and board president of Bader and Simon. In this podcast, we will discuss art, social justice, and, well, basic BS with friends. Our approach is a bit lighter and irreverent. And as a warning for those with young ones nearby, there is a chance that colorful language might be used from time to time. Thank you for joining us and enjoy the episode. Thank you for joining us today. So today marks our 31st episode over the past 15 months, and it's been an incredible journey with some amazing guests. And today I wanted to share a repeat episode with Sarah Vance Waddle. Sarah is the newest board member to join our organization, and we could not be more thrilled to have her. As an advocate for the arts, specifically art that focuses on women artists and underrepresented voices, Sarah is a fierce asset to Bader and Simon, especially given our mission, which is to bring recognition to the achievements of underrepresented artists by empowering communities to collaborate around art, education, and social justice issues. And part of that mission includes our empowerment grant. I'm happy to report that we just announced our first recipient. The San Francisco Bay Area artist Robert Hightower was selected from a pool of 48 applications from numerous countries that include Europe, Africa, Asia, North America. Robert is a self-taught monochromatic artist who captures his journey of mental health therapy sessions through his work, and he will further explore the therapeutic aspects of art and share his journey of navigating these challenges so that he may inspire others to express their own healing processes. Robert's work will be one of the first exhibitions at Bader and Simon when we open next year. And we cannot wait to collaborate with, work with, support him as he expands on this series. We will have Robert on as a future guest on the podcast. But until then, you can find his work on Instagram at The Art of Robart. That's R-O-B-A-R-T, and online at iamrobart, R-O-B-A-R-T.com. But for now, I'll return to Sarah Vance Waddle, who discusses her love of art and how it can not only support those who do the work, but it can also educate and inform. So enjoy this repeat episode, and until next time, have a great day. Sarah Vance Waddle is a community advocate, philanthropist, animal rights and social justice advocate, and art collector. She has amassed one of the Midwest's most extensive collections of women's art featuring local, national, and international artists. She frequently loans her work to institutions around the world. Sarah currently serves on several boards, including the Committee on Media and Performance at the Museum of Modern Art in New York and Wavepool in Cincinnati, Ohio. She is the trustee emeritus for Artworks, also in Cincinnati. She is a co-chair for the Ohio Advisory Group and the National Advisory Board for the National Museum of Women in the Arts, located in Washington, D.C. Sarah serves as the board chair of the Carol Lee Schneeman Foundation in New York and is an honorary lifetime trustee of Cancer Family Care. As the owner and president of SMV Media, a media management company, she has over 35 years of media planning and buying experience. She attended Morehead State University and earned a Bachelor of Arts in Journalism with an emphasis on public relations. Sarah's hobbies include boxing, pickleball, wine, and art collecting. She lives in Indian Hill, Ohio, with her wife, Michelle, and two fur children, Bella and Ziva D. So thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So you have, as I mentioned, quite a collection that started off mostly as what would be described as feminist art. I know that's transitioned a little bit lately. I'd love to know what inspired you to start collecting art and when you first began.
Okay, so I didn't grow up around art. My mother had some John Ruthven prints, a local artist in Cincinnati. I never even had gone to a museum until I was in my 30s. And so my job is advertising, and I have a media management company, as you alluded to earlier. And one of my clients about 20 years ago was the Cincinnati Art Museum. So I would go over there a lot for meetings, and I would just be like amazed and enamored with all the wonderful works of art because I had never been in a museum. So after my meetings, I would walk around and see what was going on and just kind of take it all in. And so from that point, I started collecting art, and I went to, at that time, a woman named Phyllis Weston, who was considered the art maven of Cincinnati, an older woman who worked for Clausen's, and she kind of gave me my start in helping me collect. When I first started collecting, which I said, I think it was like 20 some years ago, I was all over the board. I was eclectic. So I was collecting old Cincinnati artists, living and deceased. A lot of Marc Chagall, loved his work. Women artists, men artists, I mean, you named it. I was all over the board with the mediums. I was doing works on paper and photography and sculpture, everywhere. I was everywhere. And probably about 10 years into my collecting, Carl Solway, who owned a gallery here, he's since passed away, told me that I needed to start focusing on something other than just being all over the place. And he suggested I focus on women artists. And that's kind of how that came about.
And I imagine the more, I know this has happened with me having a focus with my art collection, that once you start down that path, it's almost like you can't unsee it and you find it. Somehow the universe draws you in these directions.
Constantly.
Probably too much, right?
Well, once I started, you know, zeroing in on women artists and also then artists of color as well, it's like the world kind of figures out who you are and what you like. And so I can't even begin to tell you how many emails I get a day from galleries all over the world and artists wanting me to look at this, look at that. And it's sometimes it's just, it inundates me. And it's like, you know, What am I supposed to do if there's too much? But it's kind of cool though, because it kind of comes to me. You know, I don't, very seldom do I go to the art. I mean, unless I'm going to a museum or a gallery, but most of the time when I collect, someone has sent me something, I've seen it online. I haven't seen it in person until it arrives, which is kind of weird to some people.
It's probably like Christmas every day when these things show up.
It is. Between that and my wine, it's like there's always a box to open, much to Michelle's chagrin.
I was going to say, that's a good party at your house.
Oh, but even I'm getting to the point of, oh my God, Sarah, you do have a lot of art. I mean, Tammy, you've seen our art. I mean, you know what I have. And it's to the point where I'm like, maybe I should slow down a bit, but I'm not stopping though. But I might be slowing down a little bit. We'll see. We'll see where that gets me.
Do you know how many pieces you have in your collection? Am I allowed to ask that?
Yeah, I have probably around 1,000 works. We have a couple of homes. They're there. I have work, obviously, at my home, out my home here in Cincinnati. As far as my art and storage, my storage place is here on site at our house in Cincinnati. I don't ever want to acquire more art than I can keep in my home or homes. I don't want it to be somewhere else offsite. It bothers me that it's in storage as it is, but you know, as you know, when you're a collector, you sometimes don't have the space to have everything up. So that's kind of where everything is, and that's kind of how much I have.
That's amazing. Can you share a story about a time you discovered an unknown artist whose work you now own that really kind of knocked your socks off that you came across?
An unknown artist. Well, one of the things I do that I really like, and I know a lot of local collectors don't do it, is I acquire art by our local artists, and I also buy a lot of art from our students at art schools in Ohio, from the Art Academy here in Cincinnati, from Miami University, their art program, and then UC's DAP program. So a lot of times the instructors invite me to come to see the students work, and I fall in love with some of the work and I end up acquiring it. So I can't say that there's one specific find. I have found probably at least 10 or so students who are now no longer students. They're mostly, most of them are now out in the world trying to make their art, sell their art and whatnot. A lot of them have done really well, have gotten galleries, gone on. But I can't define one thing or one, it's probably a conglomeration of several, and they're students. I mean, that's who, there's one student, and her name escapes me. She's from the Art Academy, and she was doing portraits of Black women where she would, Natalia Babbitt is her name, and she would interview these women, and then she would do portraits. And when I first stumbled upon her work at the Art Academy, I was blown away. To me, her work reminded me of Amy Sherald. We all know who Amy Sherald is. You know, she did Obama, Michelle Obama's portrait. So there are so many amazing, amazing artists locally that I really love to tap into and support. And their work is just magnificent.
And how great for them as a student who's launching themselves into the art world to have a piece of art in your collection, because you have an amazing collection with some pretty big names. And so I would imagine that has got to feel great for them to be keeping that company in that collection and to have work hanging.
Yeah. I mean, all of them say to me, I am so honored to be in your collection. I'm so honored. And I'm like, well, thanks for saying that. But honestly, you deserve to be in my collection because your work's really good. And I will not acquire work of anybody's if I don't like it and I don't feel it's good for me, for how I collect and what I collect. So if I acquire your work, consider yourself, you know, you're an amazing artist in my book.
And I think I venture to guess that you collect the same way I do. I'm not collecting for the investment. I'm collecting because it's serving a purpose. It's for education. It's because I like the piece, because I want to support the artist. And I think those are all the same ways that you look at collecting. And so in terms of that, how do you approach building your collection? And then what is your long-term vision for it?
Well, my long-term vision for it is what keeps me up at night, because what I want to do, mainly the art by women, and I have a lot of, you know, a lot of work that's art by women. I would like to find a place where I can donate it, where it can stay together, would be my preference. And I'd love to keep it local. So somewhere in the state of Ohio. I don't want to, you know, cherry pick my pieces and go, so many goes to this museum, so many goes to this museum, you get some. Because those are large institutions that would like some of my work. But I think my work that I collect would mean a lot if it stayed local, that local people can see it and view it without any charge, that young people can come and look at it. All students, you know, grad students, students in art schools, they can come and look at it and, you know, maybe even have a gallery space where, you know, have an exhibition of work by a student. So that's my hope, that is to find a place where I could stay locally. I've been working on it for about a year, like really full steam ahead, trying to put feelers out there. So if you know of anything, Tammy, let me know. Or if there's something you and I can start in addition to what you're doing, that's kind of what I like to do with my work, is just to give it, donate it, and have it serve a great purpose and be accessible to everybody.
That's great. And I think, again, I've said this a million times when people ask me why Cincinnati, but it's really a rich area of culture and art. And I think Ohio as well. And I think that surprises people when they're on one coast or the other to hear about this area that is so culturally rich and has so many art institutions. And just what you're doing, what I'm trying to do, that these pockets exist that sort of elude those in California and New York. When you're building your collection, is there any approach to it other than just sticking to your theme and buying what you like?
Well, a couple things. So I'm constantly always, typically I'll keep a little file that says art I want. And so are artists I'd like to collect. The funny thing is I never get to that file because I'm inundated so many times from the galleries and artists that I'm like, And another way that I build my collection is by going to exhibitions at museums. Example, I just recently acquired a piece by Basira Khan, who has an exhibition right now at the Contemporary Arts Center in Cincinnati. She's an amazing artist. Didn't know about her work until the show here. So, I went, I saw, and I was actually taken around by Basira herself, which was awesome. And that's the other thing about collecting art and by artists that are living is that I love to get to know them. I've become friends with many artists that I've collected. Some of us are just really super close. We do things together. So that's important to me. So it's really important to me to get to know the artist. And if I can go through their work at an exhibition or a gallery with them, it's a little more meaningful to me. So, that's one way I do like to build my collection is by actually seeing the work in exhibitions. And typically I keep a little notebook and it's like, oh, I really like that artist. I really like that artist. So probably between that and getting all the emails I get from galleries and whatnot. And, when I go to New York and whatnot, and even here in Cincinnati, I like going to art shows and exhibitions. So the problem is, Tammy, I always find something I like somewhere. And that's like, you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. I start every January, think, okay, here's my budget. Yes. And by March, I've hit that. And then I spend the next, 9 months trying to negotiate and justify moving beyond that budget. So I'm not very good at it. And I don't think you are either from what I know.
I think you and I are a lot alike. You're my art sister because I do the same thing. It's like, here, Sarah, here's your budget. It's January. Now this budget's for the whole year, by the way. Okay. And you're right. By February, March, I'm like, oh, holy moly, it's gone. And then I'm like, and then Michelle said to me, well, it's gone. So you have to sell some stuff. Now, you alluded to earlier, I like you, I don't buy to sell, to make money and investment and all that. I buy what I like. And I don't buy with the notion of ever selling anything. But I have deaccessioned many male artists that do no longer fill my buying philosophies for several reasons. And then I'll take that money and then I'll put it into buying work of art by women or artists of color. So that's kind of another way I can make my budget move a little faster or a little longer down the pike is if I can part with a couple things and that no longer serve my purpose.
That's great. And then it also hones in on the focus of your collection when you do that. How do you handle the maintenance and preservation of your collection?
Well, I'm a control freak, so I pretty much do everything on my own. I don't want to amass such a big collection that I need to hire help. What I do have is I rotate my art, I have a gallery in my home that's designated to women artists. And then I have other places in my home that I have art up. And so I rotate that a couple times a year. And I have two young men that help me. One used to be the chief preparator of the CAC. Another one also used to do some preparator work at the CAC in the art museum, and he's an artist. So I do have qualified, amazing people to install my work and all that good stuff. So that's, to me, that's half the battle right there because I would never be good at it myself. I have a system through Art Systems that I keep all the art that I have on it. And I first started, when I started collecting 20, 25 years ago, I kept, and I still do, which is really kind of old school, but I do. I keep a file on every artist I have, you know, and there is information on them, you know, the invoice, just stuff or correspondence from them that they've sent to me and things like that. So I have that, but I also have a program on my computer that lets me put everything in and it compilates it. And then I can spit out different kinds of reports. So that's been really helpful. It's expensive. It just went up. And I was like, really? I mean, I'm just a basic collector. I don't need, you know, mass. I mean, I'm not, you know, Rockefeller or anything. You know, I just need a basic system and I want to be able to handle it myself. So I did it first. When I first went to the system, I did have a good friend who's a curator who is between jobs. He inputted all my stuff. He got me set up, which was awesome. So since that point, years ago, I maintain it myself and I try to monthly update it, but sometimes I don't and it catches up with me and it's like takes forever. And so I do try to keep up with it. So I end up, it's really on me that I do it.
Yeah. I found when I first started, I was using an Excel spreadsheet, which I still keep.
Great.
But you know, after 5 or 6 years of collecting, I'm realizing like, holy shit, this spreadsheet's getting longer and longer and more in depth than what I ever anticipated when I started out. And I do know that there are a lot of systems out there, but you're right. A lot of them are geared more for institutions than personal collectors.
Mm-hmm. If you find one that's, let me know. If you find a better one than what I have, let me know, please.
I will. Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm still, you know, I'm behind you on the years of doing this, but I do feel like the more I collect, the more pieces I have, the more I'm refining how I keep track of it all.
Right. Right.
And
that's true.
And it's important. I jokingly tell my kids I have something I refer to as the bus document, as in if I get hit by a bus, here's the document. Mm-hmm. My son jokingly said, it's going to be really twisted if you actually die by bus, you know, but I told them, I said, do not sell how ugly you think it is. I don't care how cheap you think it is. Do not do anything with the art until you consult the bus document. And I think the software and the spreadsheets are great for personal collectors to use for that purpose.
Right. It's true.
Can you tell us about any unique or unexpected pieces in your collection that you're particularly proud of?
Gosh, that's almost like asking a mother, who's your favorite kid? I have a couple that I would say come to mind. First, probably the first and foremost is a piece that my wife, Michelle, happens to also love. And it's by an artist friend of ours named Patricia Cronin, who is married to the artist and painter Deborah Cass. And Patty is an amazing sculptor. And so before gay marriage was legal, she wanted to pay tribute to she and her partner, Deb, and to same-sex couples everywhere. And so she and Deb went to Woodlawn Cemetery in Brooklyn, which is like our Spring Grove Cemetery in Cincinnati, just a beautiful cemetery where a lot of famous people are buried and whatnot, with gorgeous graves and monuments. And they bought a plot and she decided to do a sculpture that depicted the two of them together. And she did all this research. She traveled all around the world, went to Italy and everywhere to possibly look at how all different sculptures are done and made. And she decided to do one and she called it Memorial to a Marriage. And it ended up being their tombstone at Woodlawn that people love to see when on the tour. It's one of their top tours request is Memorial to a Marriage. It depicts them in more than life size, the two of them embracing in bed with covers, the folds of the covers. You can see their toes sticking out. I mean, I think you've seen the piece in my gallery. I have a smaller brass version of it, but it's what it means. And at that time, what it meant to Patty and Deb said, what we couldn't have in life, a marriage, we'll have in death. So it became just a beautiful monument and tribute to them and to other couples everywhere. And then when same-sex marriage was legalized, it was like, hooray, hooray. But this piece still is so important, and it gets noticed all over the world because it is really the only monument in the world dedicated to same-sex couples. And Patty has been an incredible spirit and beautiful artist in getting this word out, writing books of it, doing talks. She did have for its, I think it was its 25th anniversary a few months ago. We went up to New York for it too, at Woodlawn. And she talked about it and had several talks out by the monument. And then there was this talk session inside one of the chapels, an artist talk, and it was beautiful. So that is always been one of my favorite pieces because of what it denotes. The second thing that I think that's really important to me in my collection, and it's odd now after all these years that I'm the ward president of the Carol Lee Steeman Foundation, but I have one of Carol Lee Steeman's interior scrolls. And she was such a pioneer and such an important artist and such a feminist. And she not only was, you know, did video and did performances, but she was also known, and she wanted to be known as a great painter. And I did think just having something from Carol Lee is special, and it really is more special now, like I said, now that I just this past June became the board chair for her foundation, and just to, you know, keep her legacy going. What she wanted to do in her house that's up in New Paltz in upstate New York is she wants to start an artist residency. So that's something we're working on, you know, selling some of Carol Lee's work, making money to be able to fix up the house, to be able to do this residency and preserve her legacy. So probably out of all the work I have, I mean, I like a lot of things, and I would be amiss not to mention probably 25 more, but for the sake of time, those two are tops.
I will tell you, my daughter, Lucy, is attending the new school in New York, and last semester took a performative arts course, and they studied Carol Lee in the course. And she came over one day telling me all about her, and I was so amazed and impressed. And I told her about you, and I told her about the work that you have. And it was as if I knew the biggest celebrity on earth, just the fact of mentioning you. So if I ever get her to Cincinnati, I'm going to bring her to your house so that she can meet you and see that piece.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I love hearing now that I have this 19-year-old in this liberal arts environment in New York, the things that she's learning, the things she's coming home with is just a breath of fresh air for me because, you know, we're talking about artists that I know about. I'm thrilled that she's learning about these and that they're still talking about it.
That's awesome. That's amazing. So what does she want to do? What is she studying?
At the moment, journalism, but I think she's in that who am I and what am I going to be when I grow up phase. And so I do think she's interested in illustration. She's definitely my outspoken feminist in the group, you know, so we'll see where she ends up. But I told her, now's your time to figure it out, learn it, just soak it all up and it'll all shake out in the end.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's exciting that she knows of Carol Lee. So yes, you tell her to come visit anytime she's here.
Well, so we get to do the fun questions now.
Oh boy, I'm excited about those.
Who are your dream dinner guests, as many or as few as you want, dead or alive?
Okay, well, the first is my mom. She's been gone a long time, and I was 27 when I lost her. I'm 60 now, so it's been a while. So I would love to be sitting down with my mother right now. I think that would just be totally the best thing ever. So other folks that are probably a little more famous, I would love to sit down with Lady Gaga. I would love to sit down with Michelle Obama. And I definitely would like to sit down with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So all women, surprise, surprise.
All very strong, powerful women.
Absolutely. Yep. There we go.
What song is the soundtrack of your life?
Dancing Queen by ABBA. My favorite song. It's been my favorite song. And when I die, Michelle knows that when the service is over and they're carrying my casket out, they're going to go out to Dancing Queen by ABBA, because that's my jam.
That makes sense. Flat or sparkling?
Sparkling. Always sparkling.
It's kind of like your life.
In fact, I buy so much. I'm a big Perrier drinker, but it has to be in the bottles, like the small bottles, not the big ones. And sometimes it's really hard to find. So I sometimes drive Michelle nuts because I buy in bulk. So if I find like 10 things of it, I buy all up. So I try to keep as much Perrier on hand as I possibly can.
And we're not getting sponsored by them. I'll just mention, I didn't pay you to say that.
No, just, you know, you did not.
What social justice cause is most meaningful to you at this moment?
It definitely would be helping to exonerate a really good friend of ours that we've had the privilege of getting to know over the last couple of years. Michelle and I have kind of adopted her. She's like the little sister I never had. Tyra Patterson is her name. She serves 23 years in prison for a crime she did not commit. She was a teenager when she went in. She couldn't read or write. She was homeless when she went in. The system basically did her dirty, as it does a lot of women, a lot of people. So she's been out 5 years now. And no longer has to do parole and all that stupid stuff. So working to get her exonerated and compensated is like number one on my list. It's not going to be easy, I've been told. It could take a long time. But that's the most important thing for me right now. And then also, I like working with Tyra to help other women impacted by the system, whether they deserve to be there or did not. But help them when they get out, just go about life. What do you do? Help them get started, you know, give them some furniture, give them some clothing, because they just stick them out there with nothing. And so I think, you know, helping more men and women, but mostly women, because that's my jam is helping women. That's kind of what I'd like to do. And I didn't honestly know Tammy about social justice really until I met Tyra. So she's really opened my eyes to a lot of things.
Are there any organizations that our listeners could or should know about in this area that you could just mention? Because I think if people wanted to learn about this, I think it'd be worthy to mention them.
Well, there is one nonprofit called Damascus that actually was started by a couple friends of ours, Todd and Christine Marallen. Christine was a chaplain in the prison systems for years and taught classes in the men's prisons and the women's prisons. And then she finally got out of that, and she and Todd, her husband, started this company organization that basically, when men and women, before they come out of prison, they like to go and teach classes on helping them go from being confined to being free and what all that means, and helping them learn things and find places to live. One of their main things is they help find these folks places to work and help get them there with transportation and whatnot. So they are one organization we love to support. Another one is actually Tyra wants to start. It hasn't been started yet, but she would like to do something too that basically helps women coming out of the system and letting them have a place to stay with, you know, kind of their own space and not being a really bad part of town, and just give them a leg up. So those are kinds of a couple of things that we're looking into.
Great. And our last question, who is your least favorite Supreme Court justice?
Do I just have to pick one? Just one?
I know, it's a tough question.
Oh, so one, really one. Oh, boy.
Well, who do you think is the worst of the lot?
They all are bad. But I'm telling you who I'm going to pick, and I'll tell you why. I'm going to pick Clarence Thomas only because he's trying to come after gay marriage and it ticks me off. I'm like, dude, you know, your marriage was on the line for a long time. You married an interracial couple, right? You have been persecuted. Why are you coming after us? I mean, trust me, there's two others I detest just as much as Clarence, but I'm going after Clarence because he's coming after me. And that makes me mad. So it's like, stay away.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Makes sense. I thought the same thing. I thought the same thing. When you look at the loving situation, I mean, it wasn't all that many years ago that interracial marriage was illegal. And it's also still really looked down upon in many states. So it's pretty amazing for him to take that stance.
Yeah. Well, exactly. You know, it's like people have been coming after his marriage. I mean, he knows how that feels. Why does he think he has to use his time to come after gay marriage and same-sex couples? It makes no sense. I'm like, you are just, I'm sorry. Three of them really need to go. They just need to go. However it is, they need to go.
We need to have that dinner with Ruth so you can discuss this.
Yes, how to get them off. Yes, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. This has been great. It's been interesting and enlightening, and I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
Absolutely. Anytime for you, Tammy.
And hopefully I'll see you in Cincinnati with my daughter sometime soon.
Well, let me know when you're in town so we can get together for sure.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for joining us today. If you'd like to reach out and let us know your preference for flat or sparkling or anything else you'd like to share, you can find us on Instagram at Bader and Simon Gallery or on our website, baderandsimon.com, where you will find information about current exhibitions and programming. Until next time, have a fabulously artistic day.